Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air. Today on Advanced, join us as we discover hidden treasure. Hi friends, welcome to Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Naomi and today is May 6th. We're on our third article of the month, The Black Star of Queensland. And this article is full of intrigue and mystery and drama, and it's a little bit different from the articles we usually run in Advanced, but I think you'll find it pretty interesting and hopefully you'll learn a lot of vocabulary and something about writing as well. With me to talk about this article, first of all, Howie.
Hello, Naomi. Hello, friends. This is a pretty interesting article, not only because it has a lot of adventure, like you said, Naomi, but also because there's, if you like jewelry, if you like jewels, or if you like to find that diamond in the rough, I guess we can talk about that term later, you'd find this also fascinating as well.
Okay. Are you into gemstones, Howie?
I used to be. I used to like go to the museums and sure, I like to look at diamonds and rubies and emerald. So when I saw this, I was like, wow, cool. This is really good.
Okay. I remember collecting gemstones as a child as well, thinking they were pretty interesting, all the different colors. But I know once you've picked out, for example, an engagement ring, you start to learn a lot more about stones.
That is right. You learn about different terms such as carats and cut.
Clarity.
Yeah. Color.
All right. Also joining us, you just heard her laugh, is Winnie.
Hey, Naomi. Hello, listeners. This is a really fun article to be on. And like you mentioned before, Naomi, I think this is quite a magical story. And I can almost imagine this as a movie. Mm-hmm. So listeners, you're in for a treat. This is going to be a fun article.
Okay. With that good introduction, let's get right into it. We're on page 18 and we'll begin with that first column.
The Black Star of Queensland. This stunning sapphire has made its way around the world, weaving in and out of spotlight and obscurity. A boy brought home a dull-colored half-pound stone he found on the hillside, and his father, Harry Spencer, thought of the perfect place for it. They would use it as a doorstop. The year was 1938. And their home was a modest shack in a sparsely populated, dusty stretch of gem mining territory in central Queensland, Australia. The stone sat there for 10 years until a jeweler recognized its potential and it was polished to reveal a six-pronged, mesmerizingly beautiful star, or so goes the story, about the largest known star sapphire in the world.
Okay, so the Black Star of Queensland. Well, first of all, what is it? At first someone said, is it a person? What is this famous Black Star? Is it like a celebrity from Australia? First of all, Winnie, where is Queensland?
Well, listeners, if you look at the map on page 18, you can find that Queensland is northern Australia and includes cities like Brisbane.
Okay, and we're not talking about a celebrity, are we, Howie?
No, we're talking about a gemstone. We're talking about a sapphire.
Okay, so this stunning sapphire. If something is stunning, it's so beautiful that you're almost dazed. You're a little shocked by it. It says it has made its way around the world. And then there's an interesting little phrasal verb there.
Yeah, weaving in and out of spotlight and obscurity. We'll first start with weaving in and out. Now, usually weaving, we think about sewing or knitting. But here it means you're moving in and out and side to side. So sometimes we say if you're driving, you're weaving in and out of traffic.
True. Okay, usually when I think of weaving strictly, of course, the definition is about weaving cloth. And in order to do that, little fibers of cloth have to go over and under each other. Just take a look at your shirt or your pants and you'll see it. You can see the grain, the weave of the fabric. But we also talk about it in traffic. That's a great example, going in and out of these little spots on the road. Here, this sapphire has been weaving in and out of what?
Of spotlight and obscurity. And it's a very interesting way that they've used it here. But they're not talking about traffic. They're talking about maybe having the world's eye or attention brought to the stone. And so spotlight is when you, maybe a lot of people pay attention to a certain subject. For example, I think of maybe actors or actresses on stage, and a spotlight would be on them and everybody's eyes would be on them. And the opposite of that is obscurity, where maybe nobody would know that they're there.
Right. Obscurity. I think about often maybe musicians. They have a one-hit wonder. They do one wonderful song, and then they fade into obscurity.
That's
for
right.
About a year, everybody on the planet seems to know who they are, and after that, we never hear anything about them again. So obscurity is sort of like the opposite of fame. And so this sapphire has been hidden and famous throughout time. We'll talk during the next 3 days about that story and exactly how it happened. But we have an introduction beginning in our first paragraph there. How are we first introduced to the stone in the story?
Well, we first hear about a boy who brought home a dull-colored half-pound stone that he found on the hillside.
Okay. So he just was walking around one afternoon and found a big stone. Sounds like the kind of thing a kid would do. But he brought it to his father, Harry Spencer, and what did his father say?
His father thought of a perfect place for this large rock. They would use it as a doorstop. A doorstop is something that you would use to hold the door open. It's usually like a piece of wood or a rock, yes.
And it needs to be heavy because the wind can blow and you want something that won't let that door budge, won't allow it to move. So they use this big stone as a doorstop. And we did this in my house growing up too. My mother would, you know, find some nice looking stone on a beach or somewhere and she'd bring it home and say, okay, we can use this to hold the door open. Now, it's sort of a funny little anecdote, right, Winnie?
Right. An anecdote, listeners, is like a little story. And sometimes writers use this to bring you into what's actually happening. And so you're not too sure of what the article is about yet, but you're interested in the story. So it's a way of catching the reader's attention.
Okay. Usually when we think about writing a story, we always say, well, you start at the beginning, right? Where does the story start? Start there. But here, actually, this isn't really the beginning of the story. We're starting a little ways in already, and you'll see that we'll need to back up in the next section. But in this reading, we're talking about the year of 1938. We're sort of in the middle of the story already, and we're in the Spencers' home if we go on to the next paragraph in line 15. Their home was nothing too special.
No, it was a modest shack. That's how their home was described. When something is modest, it's pretty ordinary or average, maybe even humble. And a shack, when you say someone's home is a shack, you're not really paying them a compliment. You're saying that it's a small house, maybe even kind of dirty or not very nice.
Yeah. Mostly I would use this word talking about when I've traveled to other places where the economy is very poor, then some people live in shacks and they really aren't, I wouldn't even call them complete houses. So the author is trying to make a point that the Spencers were not very well off. They didn't have a lot of money. So where was this shack located?
The shack was located in a sparsely populated area in central Queensland. And sparsely is another way of saying very, very little people. So it's not like a big city where there are people everywhere, but nobody was really there. It was a very small town.
Okay. If something is sparse, it means there's not much there. Also, we talk about sometimes something like sparse shrubbery or trees. You know, there's not much growing in this place, just like a sparse population means there's not many people. So this territory in central Queensland, there's something special about it. It's gem mining territory. What does that mean?
It's a place where a lot of people work in mines to dig up and find gems. So this dusty stretch, and a stretch is just a continuous, unbroken area of gem mining territory in central Queensland.
Okay, so we have learned a lot about their situation from this one sentence. We know the time, we know they're not very well off, we know that there aren't many people in this area, and we also know that it is a place where people have found gems before. So we are already getting a clue that maybe this dull-colored half-pound stone that we were introduced to in the first paragraph might be something special. Right now it's being used as a doorstop, though, and we see in line 18 it says the stone sat there for 10 years. Until what?
Until one day, a jeweler recognized its potential and it was polished to reveal a six-pronged, mesmerizing, beautiful star. So we're finding more action to the story here, and we find that this jeweler comes by and recognizes or realizes that this is not just any rock.
Okay, the jeweler looked at it and said, wait a second, this could be more than a doorstop. There's something special here. So it was polished to reveal this mesmerizingly beautiful star. Mesmerizingly.
When something is mesmerizingly, it's enchanting, it's captivating. When you look at it, you can't take your eyes off of it.
Okay. All right. So it's a really beautiful star, or at least that's how the story goes. So what we've read so far in this article is all being kind of summarized here in this last section, or so goes the story about the largest known star sapphire in the world. In other words, this is what we have heard about it. This is how the story goes. This is what the rumor is. And now we're going to learn a little bit more about it. Right now, my question is, who is this jeweler? Well, we're going to go back in time a little further and learn who he is. So let's continue with the next column.
A star is born. In about 1908, Harry Kazingian's family fled to France to escape the persecutions that preceded the Armenian Genocide. When they tried to board a ship bound for the U.S., guards wouldn't let young Harry on because of his infected eye. While his family sailed across the Atlantic, Harry stayed behind in Paris and apprenticed for his stonecutter uncle. Kazingian discovered he had a knack for envisioning a gemstone in the rough, the way sculptors see a finished work in a slab of marble. When he reunited with his family, he convinced his brother James to go into the gem business with him.
Okay, so we started reading this story in 1938 when this dull-colored half-pound stone was discovered in Australia. But now we're traveling a little further back, 30 more years to 1908. And who are we meeting?
We're meeting this person named Harry Kazingian, and we're going to learn a little bit about history here because Harry's family fled to France to escape the persecutions that preceded or happened before the Armenian Genocide.
Okay. First of all, Armenian. Anyone whose last name ends like this, I-A-N, mostly is Armenian. Most of my friends who are Armenian have names that end in this, E-N. And it's a people group. It's not really a country, though, is it?
No, it's a people group, and they were found mostly in what they call the Ottoman Empire in that time, in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And the Ottoman Empire is now known as Turkey, basically.
Right.
And they were Christians, and they were persecuted because of their religion at the time, and that's why Harry's family had to leave.
Okay, let's talk a bit about that word persecution. Winnie?
Well, persecution means that they would be treated unfairly because of a person's race or religion. And in this case, we know that, like how he said, they were Christian, and so it was based on religion and I think also race as well.
Okay, but what would it mean that they would be persecuted? People would just make fun of them? Or?
Well, they might be thrown into jail or beaten up, or they would not have the same opportunities maybe as other people.
Okay, so this is serious. It's not just sometimes today we use this word persecution to mean something a lot lighter, sort of someone just making fun of you or giving you a bit of a hard time. But here we're talking about something very serious, even life-threatening. And so people were not happy to be there. They didn't want to be in this area of the world because people were hurting them, were out to get them. And actually, they were smart to leave because we discovered that these persecutions preceded something pretty scary.
Right. It preceded the Armenian Genocide. And genocide is a very serious word. We hear that throughout history. It's the murder of a whole people group, basically. Mm-hmm. Probably the most famous type of genocide is the Holocaust during World War II when the Nazis wanted to kill all the Jews, basically.
Right. And here I believe numbers I've seen are something like over a million Armenian people were killed during this time. You can do more research on that if you're interested in it. But basically, Harry Kazanjian's family was afraid of getting hurt during this time, and rightly so. So what did they decide to do?
Well, they decided to board a ship bound or headed for the United States. However, here's an interesting twist to the story. Guards would not let young Harry onto the ship because he had an eye infection.
Right. Okay, so this family first went from the area where they were living up to France, and then from France they were intending to go to the United States. However, if you were on a ship in that early part of the 1900s, anything that was on a ship that could infect other people was pretty scary. They wanted to avoid, big diseases just running rampant on a ship of people, so they wouldn't let him on. So what happened?
Well, Harry had to stay behind in Paris, and he apprenticed for his stonecutter uncle. And normally apprentice is a noun, but here it's being used as a verb. And here it means you're agreed to work for a skilled person for a period of time to learn that person's skills. And here it's to be a stonecutter.
Right. If you are an apprentice, you're a student, but usually probably the only student of someone who has a very useful skill, and you're learning how to do this skill as well as they do. So his stonecutter uncle, he was someone who found gems, found precious stones, and learned how to cut them away to show their full potential. Let's look at that next paragraph, Winnie.
Kazanjian discovered that he had a knack for envisioning a gemstone in the rough. We have lots of interesting words here. But first, to have a knack for something means that you may have a special skill or ability to do something really well. So, for example, I think Howie has a knack for finding good deals online.
That's true. Yeah. Okay, not everyone has these kinds of skills. Usually it's something that is just a gift you have.
Yes.
Not necessarily something that you've learned. You just have a knack for it.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of natural. All right. But the next one is, I think, a really key phrase in this article. He was able to envision or see in his imagination a gemstone in the rough.
Earlier in the program, I mentioned diamond in the rough, but here I'm saying gemstone in the rough. And anything in the rough means it's something that's not finished yet. It's in its unfinished condition. For example, a gemstone, before you polish it and cut it, it just looks like an ordinary rock.
Right.
So it's something that you wouldn't notice right away because, of course, a diamond or any kind of polished gem is brilliant and is captivating. You'd see it right away. But when something's in the rough, it's not noticed right away.
Okay. It's compared here to the way sculptors see a finished work in a slab of marble. I think it was Michelangelo who liked to talk about that, sort of freeing the sculpture from within the stone. Mm-hmm. Here, it's talking about gemstones in the rough. Interestingly, we can use this expression about people sometimes. Sometimes we talk about people as diamonds in the rough. What do we mean then?
It means that they look ordinary. They look not special, but they actually have some kind of potential that you don't see outwardly.
Mm-hmm. Often I think about, especially guys that I know, young men who don't always have the best manners. They're a little bit, they don't always dress really well, but they're really good people. And I just know that as they grow and mature, they'll get to be really quality people.
Another example might be maybe in athletics or sports. Mm. Maybe some coaches would be able to go see a bunch of people play, and they would be able to pick out certain players for some reason because they have this idea, hey, there's potential there. Or this person might need some work, but he has a lot of skill and a knack for a certain sport.
Okay, so even though he'll need some coaching, he's already a diamond in the rough.
That's right.
Okay, so Kazanjian could see, more literally, these gemstones in the rough. And so he really developed a skill for the gem business. And when he finally was reunited with his family, what did he do?
Well, he convinced his brother James to go into the gem business with him. So finally, he was reunited with his family. So, and now his brother is going to go into the gem business along with him.
Okay, so he really did enjoy it so much that he wanted to start a business with his brother. And we'll learn more about that in the next reading.
The brothers traveled the world, buying rare and valuable stones. The Spencer family had sold them many blue and yellow sapphires. One day in 1947, Kazanjian saw a pile of black stones at their home that the Spencers had thought worthless. He asked to inspect them, thinking they might be star sapphires. Spencer told his son to go get the doorstop. In the fist-sized stone, Kazanjian spotted a copper glimmer, a hint of the impurity that sometimes grows along a sapphire's crystals to create the star, an optical effect known as an asterism. He bought it, reportedly for $18,000, and brought it to the shop he ran with his brother in downtown L.A.
Okay, so we just learned that the brothers, James and Harry Kazanjian, went into business together, and so they traveled the world buying rare and valuable stones to polish up and sell in their shop. And here we again meet the Spencer family. I guess it must be, it's at least 30 years later already when they first encountered the Spencer family, and we learn that they had already sold them something, Winnie.
Well, they already sold them many blue and yellow sapphires. Listeners, I think this is good for you to know. Sapphires are commonly blue. Most of the ones that I've seen are blue, but they do come in many other colors as well. But for today's article, we're talking about a special sapphire that's actually black in color.
Okay, usually when you think of a sapphire, you think blue.
Yes.
But I learned one time at a trip to a jewelry store that actually many, many different colored stones are actually sapphires.
Yeah, actually, the Chinese name for a sapphire is lan bao shi, which is a blue precious stone. So some of you may think, what? There are black sapphires? There are yellow sapphires? Yes, there are.
Yeah. All right. So one day in 1947, Kazanjian saw something at the Spencer's home.
They saw a pile of black stones at their home that the Spencers thought were worthless.
Okay, so what did he do, Harry Kazanjian?
Well, he asked to inspect them, or to look at them carefully, thinking they might be star sapphires. And boy, was he right. And so Spencer told his son, oh, go get the doorstop. Go get that big rock that was by the door.
Right, so he saw a pile of black stones, and they thought, oh, these aren't worth anything. We'll just throw them away. But he said, oh, I think they're star sapphires. And so The father went, oh, we have another one for you to see. Remember that doorstop that we found about 10 years ago? Well, what happened with the doorstop?
Well, in the fist-sized stone, so if you can imagine your hand and you close it, that's how big that doorstop was. Kazanjian spotted a copper glimmer and a hint of the impurity that sometimes grows along the sapphire's crystal. So I just want to say a copper glimmer. So copper can be a color. It's a kind of like a brownish color. And a glimmer is like a sparkle or like a twinkle.
Right. So this copper glimmer that he saw was a hint. It suggested something. And what it conveyed to him was that maybe there's an impurity in this sapphire. Winnie, what's an impurity?
Well, impurity is something that makes something not pure. Im is the prefix for something that's not. And sometimes in stones, it means that it would lower the quality of something. But for sapphires in particular, it means that there might be crystals within the sapphire that creates a star.
Okay, it creates this optical effect known as an asterism. That just comes from a Latin root for star, but this optical effect means when you look at it, you see something. And we see it right there in the picture on page 18. We can see that star that shines when you look at it, even though it's not, it doesn't have the facets, the many, many sides of some of the other stones that we see on the page. It still has this star that shines through it. So it's something very unusual, very special. And sure enough, he did see this impurity in the fist-sized doorstop. And so what did he do?
Well, he bought it, and only for $18,000. But at the time, I'm sure $18,000 was a lot of money.
Well, sure. But you will see that it grew in value quite quickly. When we say reportedly for $18,000, what does that mean?
Well, that means they're not exactly sure. Again, sometimes these stories, they go through many different people, so the numbers may not be exact. So they're saying approximately $18,000.
Okay. I love this beginning. He brought it to the shop he ran with his brother in downtown L.A. So I'm pretty hooked on this story so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's drawing us in.
Yeah, I want to find out what happens to the star.
I do too. We've learned already that it had a very humble beginning. We didn't think it was anything special, and neither did the Spencers. But Harry Kazanjian, who actually also never should have been in this business to begin with. If he had been able to go with his family on that ship, then he never would have learned the stone-cutting business. I think it's interesting that the story has so many little twists and turns, and it kind of makes you think about some of the unexpected things in life.
That's right, how all the different pieces fit together for this one story to happen. Mm-hmm. And I really just like that phrase, gemstone in the rough or diamond in the rough. And that's really one of the main phrases of the story.
Mm-hmm. And a really useful one to think mm-hmm. about. Also, again, in life, sometimes we see things that just don't seem that special or that valuable. But when we explore them a little more and give them a little more time and effort, we discover something really exciting. Also, I just, again, think it's fascinating that there's so many little twists and turns in this story.
We mentioned this earlier, the writer did a good job because Victoria Kim, she could have easily just started in 1908, but
right.
instead she started in the middle and it drew us in.
Yeah, and then we kind of start to learn more. But we still don't know exactly how the Black Star of Queensland came to be. We don't know how it got so famous, and we don't know how much it was worth in the end. So I hope you'll come back and join us again tomorrow, so that we can learn more about this fascinating story of the Black Star of Queensland. We'll see you then.